Morning, everyone. Today's daf and sifas is daf pei hey. We find ourselves on the very bottom of pei dal amud aleph. We're working off of the Mishnah. Thank the Lupin Foundation for the sponsorship of the daf. As long as zeichen nishmas liba Gabriela bar Shmuel. The Mishnah is going to bring us to really an interesting discussion today. Almost the entirety of today is dedicated to stories. Stories, not a gadata, but stories meaning incidents in various episodes where there's going to be issues of collection. And all this really comes from a Mishnah, and the Mishnah discusses two scenarios. A person dies, and he leaves a whole bunch of creditors. He leaves a woman, he leaves a Baal Chov, a regular creditor. He leaves, when I say woman, I mean his wife, his widow now. Baal Chov, Yorshim, and he leaves people inherit him. And there were assets that were being held somewhere else, meaning somebody, a third party, was holding those assets. So Rabbi Tarfon's of the opinion that you give it to Koshel Behem, you give it to the weakest of the three. We had a discussion yesterday what exactly the weakest of the three means. Well, we did that yesterday?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, good. We discussed who the weakest of the three is. It's a machlokas. Rabbi Akiva says, no. Rabbi Akiva says, we don't, when it comes to the holders of these note holders, the woman and the creditor, so we, in other words, we don't have Rachmanis and Din, but rather we go with Din. And Din is that it goes to the Yorish. And the reason why, says Rabbi Akiva, is because the Yorish is able to collect that money without a shvua. These other two, the only way they can collect their money from the Yisomim is only with a shvua. Okay, that was case number one. Case number two in the Mishnah was where there was Paris Talushim. So in other words, a man dies and he left fruit that were detached from the ground. Okay, in other words, basically, once again, they were assets. So what does the Mishnah say? Kol HaKodem Zem Behem Zach Behem. So whoever gets there first. So the woman gets there and she takes it. So the Baal Chov gets there, he takes it. The Yorshim get there, he takes it. Whoever gets there first, so they're the ones who get it. What if the after the grabbing there was Mosar, there was leftover? So then what happens to that? So once again, we go back to the Machlokus between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon says, give it to the person with the weakest position, and Rabbi Akiva says, no, don't do that, but rather give it to the Yorshim, because the Yorshim are the ones who are going to be able to collect without a shvua. Okay, that is all what we saw yesterday in the Mishnah, and really what this is going to do, we have a little bit more Gemara we have to learn over the course of today, and then, we have a lot of Gemara to learn, but I'm saying a little bit in terms of setting up what the Halacha is, and then after that, it's all a question of just one case after another case. So really, today a lot of case studies over the course of today. We're on the very bottom of Pei Dal Amud Aleph, and we start with Hinich Perus HaTolushin, Rabbi Akiva Ma'iriya Mosar, Kulanamid Yarshim Havo. So the Gemara just wants to know, now in the Mishnah, in the second case in the Mishnah, where you have the Perus HaTolushin, it was detached fruit, and we're having a discussion of somebody grabs and he takes a little more than he should. According to Rabbi Akiva, why are we even bothering discussing the Mosar? According to Rabbi Akiva, we know the din is that everything goes to the Arish. So why are you having such a minutia discussion on a point that for Rabbi Akiva, there's no point in even discussing? Don't discuss the Mosar, discuss the entire all the fruit. So the Gemara says, your point very well taken. The Gemara says, correct. But Rabbi Tarfon Moser Tana Iu Nami Moser. Look, Rabbi Tarfon is talking about the Moser, so Rabbi Akiva responds to the Moser. But the truth of the matter is that according to Rabbi Akiva, we're talking really about the entirety of the detached fruit, which then leads the Gemara to ask the following question: Pei Dalet Amud Beis, very top. Rabbi Akiva Tfisa Lo Mahanya Klal. Now, according to Rabbi Akiva, I don't understand. The man is owed money, meaning, and in this case, the woman is owed money. You have a Baal Chov, you have an Isha. They're holding notes, both of them. They're entitled to money, and so Tfisa doesn't work. Now, the idea behind Tfisa is that look, they owe me money. They're holding the money. They're not paying me. So, in certain areas in Halacha, you can go over there and you can take. And that taking, although it's, you know, obviously an aggressive move, but you're within your right. You're holding a note saying that you owe the money. So we have a concept in Halacha known as Tfisa. And according to Rabbi Akiva, Tfisa doesn't work at all. Meaning, remember, what does our Mishnah say? That according to Rabbi Akiva, if you have the Baal Chov, if you have the Isha taking, right, according to Rabbi Akiva, say, even though you're holding a note, you are not entitled. But rather, we take the assets right out of their hand and we give it over to the Yorshim. The Gemara says, I don't understand. Rabbi Akiva just simply doesn't subscribe to the idea of Tfisa. Amar Rav Nachman, Behusha Tafas Mechayim. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva does subscribe to Tvisa, while the borrower is still alive, and while he can fend for himself and fight for himself. So you're holding a note against the borrower, he's not paying, he has the assets, you come and you take. Even Rabbi Akiva would say that's fine. The issue at hand over here is he's dead, and now a question of who's first in line? The Baal Chov, the Isha, the Yorshim. Who's first in line? So Rabbi Akiva says, we take the Yorshim, we'll put the Yorsh first in line. That's the only point of the Mishnah. And that's correct. That means that Tfisa would not work after the person's dead. But again, in defense of the Yorshim, they are now inheriting, and also the Yosomim. Right? Again, I don't know exactly at what point in your life you're considered a Yosom in this regard. But in defense of the Yosomim, so we're gonna give them all the assets, and then, after that, then if the creditor and the widow go to court and they're going to collect from the estate, then they're going to have to make a shvuah, fine. But no tfisa after the person died, after the principal person died.
If the wife or the lenders, right?
Yeah.
If they do the visa, they still have to do shvuah after they even have.
Doesn't seem that way. Doesn't seem. In other words, if they're holding a note, so and the person's alive, that doesn't sound like that. After
the person is passed away, right?
Right.
And they seize his property. They have to make a shvuah.
So according to Rabbi Kiva, seizure is just simply not you can't do it according to Rabbi Kiva. In other words, according to Rabbi Kiva, this is going to be one of the basic points of today.
And Rabbi Tarfon says that if they seize, they don't have to take an oath.
And according to Rabbi Tarfon, maybe they do. I'm not sure about. But in other words, as we'll see in just a moment, the basic machlokas we're going to see over the course of today is that according to Rabbi Akiva, once a person's dead, that's it. We do not allow the balichov and any of the balichov, wife included, to just simply grab and seize. And Rabbi Tarfon is going to allow it under certain circumstances. Okay. Ula Rabbi Tarfon.
Once death occurs, then the heirs are in possession.
Correct, correct. Now, Ula Rabbi Tarfon, the Manchehecha. Now, according to Rabbi Tarfon, let's think about Rabbi Tarfon's position, because Rabbi Tarfon's position is really difficult to understand. According to Rabbi Tarfon, the man died, and now there are assets. And now it's a question of whoever gets there first in, whoever grabs it is going to be able to acquire it. To which the Gemara says, what? Meaning, generally speaking, what happens when a person dies? His assets automatically go to the Yorish. The Yorish don't have to make a collection of those assets. Those assets belong to the Yorish. So what the Gemara now wants to know is, how does Rabbi Tarfon work? How does his position work? Where you can have a Baal Chov and he can come and he can take and they, okay. And really, and it doesn't automatically go to the Yorish, and it doesn't require the Baal Chov to just simply turn to the Yorish and say, those possessions belong to me, let's go to court, I'll make a Shvuah. Like what? How do you understand the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon? So that's the Gemara's question. The Rabbi Tarfon, the Manchehecha. According to Rabbi Tarfon, where are these positions? Where are these assets right now? That it's first come, first serve. So Rav Shmuel, Damer Tavayev, who should see Bor Menachem Rishus Rabbim. So according to Rav and Shmuel, these assets have to be in the Rishus Rabbim. Okay. At least now we have a slightly better understanding of Rabbi Tarfon, and that is that if the possessions were in the home and the person died, automatically goes to the Yorshin and there's nothing to talk about. And then, of course, then the Balei Chov are going to have to go to court and they're going to have to make a Shvuah, and obviously they don't get to grab it first, even according to Rabbi Tarfon. However, if the possessions are in a Rishus HaRabim, we're in a Rishus HaRabim, it's... Now, it's not Hefker is not really the right word. It's not Hefker, but it's just, it is an area that's not fertile for possession. You don't just simply, items don't assume any ownership in a Rishus HaRabim. So, under those circumstances now, these items are, now I'm going to struggle in terms of saying exactly what they are right now. They're right, they're in limbo, they're available. I'm struggling, admittedly. But in other words, but they don't automatically, according to Rabbi Tarfon, they don't automatically go to the Yorashim. And now, under these circumstances, now called the Alam Gavar, whoever gets there first can take it. Whoever rightfully has an ability to take it. Aval b'simta lo. But according to Rav and Shmuel, but what if these possessions are in a simta? Simta describes Rashi is basically an alleyway off to the side of the Rishus HaRabim. Right? Rashi gives a description where, let's say, two people are having a conversation in the Rishus HaRabim. It's really loud. I can't hear you. You know what? Let's move off to the side. And they go to like an alleyway off to the side of the Rishus HaRabim. That's what halachically is referred to as a simta. there, you can make a kinyan within a simta. So, according to Rav and Shmuel, even according to Rabbi Tarfon, if the items were in a simta, they're automatically going to go to the Aresh. Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, da'ami tavayu, afilu b'simta. And according to Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, no. Even if the item is in a simta, according to Rabbi Tarfon, whoever gets there first can take it. It's only when the items are in a house, do they automatically go to the Arish? Okay. And so far so good. We have ourselves almost set up for the rest of today. A machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon. Man dies. There are creditors. They want to collect what's rightfully theirs. So can they grab? So Rabbi Akiva says, under no circumstances are they allowed to grab after the person's dead. And Rabbi Tarfon says, under certain circumstances they're allowed to grab. What are those certain circumstances? So we have a machlokas amarayim within the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. According to Rav and Shmuel, only when the items are in the Rishus HaRabim, and according to Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, when the items are in a simta, meaning an alleyway off to the side of the Rishus HaRabim, then you have an opportunity for the creditors to come and to collect even after the person's dead. Okay. Don Dayanika Rabbi Tarfon. So there were a series of judges who ruled like Rabbi Tarfon. So that means that the person died, and along came the creditors, and there were assets that were somewhere out in the open. And so according to some judges, the Gemara doesn't identify who they are. So they ruled like Rabbi Tarfon, and they allow the creditors to hold on to those assets because they seized it. Reish Lakish, I'm sorry, I skipped a word. The Ahadra Reish Lakish Leuvda Minayhu, and Reish Lakish reversed the ruling. Reish Lakish says that was malpractice on the part of the judges. Meaning the judges ruled like Rabbi Tarfon, and Reish Lakish says they had no right to do so. To which the Gemara says, "Amalei Rav Yochanan Sitzik Shel Torah," and Rav Yochanan turns to Reish Lakish and says, "Wow, it's like it was written in the Torah." Meaning, Rav Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, "Look, it's one thing to say that if you rule against a pasuk in the Torah, so that's obviously malpractice. That's rabbinic malpractice. But over here, what are we looking at? We're looking at a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon." Now, granted, you want to tell me the halacha falls like Rabbi Akiva, that's fine. But to say that these judges who ruled like Rabbi Tarfon are in violation of gross malpractice, and you're going to overturn the ruling just because they went like Rabbi Tarfon? So Rav Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, like, that seems to be excessive. So Lema Ba'akam Iflegi, the Gemara suggests now, what is really at issue between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan? So, So maybe the issue is, let's say the judge makes a mistake on a Dvar Mishnah, meaning not a Pasuk and Chumash, but what is a pretty straightforward Mishnah. Is that considered a judicial malpractice? Where you have to overturn the ruling. Maybe that's the issue over here. Lo, dekule amatab dvar mishnah chozer. So the Gemara says no. That's not even up for debate. Everyone's in agreement that if a judge rules against the Mishnah, meaning a very straightforward halacha, and everyone agrees to it, and it's a Mishnah, so that's considered malpractice, and that's considered something where an appeal can overturn that ruling. The Gemara says that's clear. And so the Gemara suggests now maybe this is what's at the core of the debate between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. Look, we have a debate in our Mishnah between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva. Generally speaking, when Rabbi Akiva argues with a colleague, we side with Rabbi Akiva in the halacha. Generally speaking. Over here, however, it becomes slightly more interesting / complicated, because Rabbi Akiva is not just arguing with anyone, he's arguing with Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon was one of the Rebbeim of Rabbi Akiva. So now the issue over here is that I know generally the halacha falls like Rabbi Akiva. And if Rabbi Akiva espouses an opinion, so generally we follow it, especially when there's only one other person arguing with him. And so that's Reish Lakish's viewpoint. And Reish Lakish says, good. So here, the creditors grabbed. The judge says, good, the creditors did a good job. And Reish Lakish says, no, I'm going to overturn that ruling. Because that ruling is going against Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, after the person dies, no one has a right to grab. It immediately goes down to the Yershim. Good. And what's Rav Yochanan's point of dispute? This is now what the Gemara is suggesting. Rav Yochanan says, if Rabbi Akiva is arguing with a colleague, you're right. But over here, he's arguing with his Rebbe. And so we don't necessarily immediately side with Rabbi Kiva when the debate is with between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi, and in this case that would be Rabbi Tarfon. That's another way the Gemara presents the debate. Gemara suggests maybe another way to look at this debate between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan is to question the relationship, the nature of the relationship between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon. Did they have a collegial relationship, or was it a Rabbi Talmud relationship? Right? I can think of, just off the top of my head, I can think of the Yerushalmi that we did, where the Gemara describes Ben Azai as being a student of Rabbi Akiva, which that we know. The Gemara tells us that. But then ultimately becoming a colleague of Rabbi Akiva.
Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish.
Right, the Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Another example, another good example where they were Rabbi Talmud and then they become colleagues. So over here, again, that could very well be the nature of the debate. Meaning, if Rabbi Tarfon was a Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva, so then we're not going to necessarily side with Rabbi Akiva. But if he was a colleague, so then we're going to side with Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara suggests another way, an alternative way to look at this issue. Could very well be that Rabbi Tarfon was a colleague of Rabbi Akiva. Everyone's in agreement. And then the only issue is that when I have a debate between Rabbi Akiva and his colleague, even though we're going to favor Rabbi Akiva, that's not open for discussion. We're going to favor Rabbi Akiva. To what degree are we going to favor Rabbi Akiva? Do we say that we incline ourselves to Rabbi Akiva, which means that in general, ask the question, Rabbi Akiva's arguing with somebody, who do you go like? They should go like Rabbi Akiva. So that's matin, or do we say no? Halachic Rabbi Akiva means that the only way to practice the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. And any other alternative way is just simply not a practiced, a normative accepted practice. So the Gemara says maybe that's the issue over here. Either way, machlokas Reish Lakish Rav Yochanan, to what degree we go like Rabbi Akiva, but the Gemara says pretty clearly that we go like Rabbi Akiva. So again, now to set us up for the rest of today, so here we go, because we're about to start one story after another. From this point going forward, really for the rest of today's daf. And that is now, you have a person who died, and you have his assets. And his assets right now are not currently being held by the children. They're somewhere else. They're hufkad. They're deposited by somebody else. It's a milva. It's a receivable that somebody owes to the estate. But right now, the assets are not held by the estate. So can a creditor come and seize those assets? So what do we have right now? A machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Kiva says no. The creditor is not entitled to seize those assets. After the person's dead, those assets immediately go to the Yorshim. Even if those assets are not currently being held by the Yorshim, they're going to go immediately to the Yorshim. And Rabbi Tarfon allows for the creditors to come and collect for themselves. There is varying degrees of when Rabbi Tarfon allows that. Is that the assets have to be in a Rishus HaRabim? Can the assets be in a Simta? That's subject to a debate, but Rabbi Tarfon does allow the creditors to come and to take.
Still agrees that they're due the money.
That not even open for discussion. They're holding an oath. Of course they're owed the money. It's just a question now of the process. According to Rabbi Akiva, the process is that all the money go down to the Yorshim, and then they're going to have to collect from the Yorshim. Which means that they're going to have to go to court, they're going to have to make a shvua. Agreed. And he's not arguing with the obligation. He's just arguing with the process of what happens next. Okay, story number one. Okay, I'm going to lose count. So it's going to be about a minion of stories that we're going to see over the course of today. Story number one, Kreved Rav Yochanan Tafus Paradias Meme Simta. So you have relatives of Rav Yochanan. I think it's the third time, but my memory is not good enough. So but a number of times over the course of this Masechta, we talk about the relatives of Rav Yochanan. So the relatives of Rav Yochanan, so they grabbed a cow in response to a obligation that they were owed. They had a receivable against an estate, and they took a cow to satisfy that. They took it from the orphans. They took it from a simta. So also coming to Rav Yochanan, Amalu Shapitav Suah. So they went to Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan gave him the thumbs up. Like, good job, guys. Meaning, you owe the money. Okay, so you had to seize, and I understand. That's aggressive, but okay, yeah, that's what you had to do. Also coming to Rav Shimon Malakish, Amalei Zila Hadur. So they go to Reish Lakish. Now, why they went to Reish Lakish after going to Rav Yochanan, I don't know. Maybe Rav Yochanan wasn't giving them a ruling. Maybe Rav Yochanan was just simply giving them advice. Either way, they went to Reish Lakish afterwards, and Reish Lakish says, yeah, you know what you're going to do now? You're going to take the cow and you're going to give it back to the estate. You had no right to seize that cow. So, and again, going based on what we know already, we know that Reish Lakish is firmly entrenched in the camp of Rabbi Akiva. Seizure is just simply not an option for the collections, for collection after the death of the principal borrower. And so therefore, Reish Lakish says, you go and you give that back to the estate. Also coming to Rav Yochanan, so they go back to Rav Yochanan, these relatives of Rav Yochanan, and they basically say, you heard what Reish Lakish told us? So Amar Lahu Maaseh Shechaneg Dichaluk Alai. So a line that we saw earlier in the Masechta as well, Rav Yochanan says to his relatives, look, it's Reish Lakish. He is my equal. He's my equivalent. So he told you what to do. I'm not going to argue with him. Again, it definitely speaks to the idea of that Reish Lakish became so great that he becomes now an equal of Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan is not ready to argue with him. Okay, that's story number one. Story number two. Hahi Hahu Bakra Diathme. So there was a Bakra, a herder, and he was in charge of animals of the orphans. So again, we're talking now about an estate, and v'tafse tura minei bachov, and along comes the creditor, and he comes and he seizes an animal. Amar, now, his claim is, the creditor, mechayim tafis nalei. So his claim is, look, I'm not denying anything. I'm holding a note. I'm a creditor. I'm owed money. And it's true, I took a cow. I took it while the principal borrower was still alive. That's his argument. Now, as far as the herdsman is concerned, who was responsible and took the had the responsibility of watching the cows, so he says, no, he took it after the principal died. So also coming to Rav Nachman. So the matter came in front of Rav Nachman. So do you have any witnesses that he seized it? Any witnesses that he actually physically grabbed it? Amalei lav. So he says, no, I don't have witnesses to such an effect. Amalei. So Rav Nachman says, really? So right now, what do we have? We have a cow within his possession. He is rightfully entitled to that cow because he's a creditor. And now the only point of debate right now is when he took it, while the person was alive or after he died. And you don't have any witnesses that he actually seized it. So now here's what he could say. And this is built on the principle of Migu. And Migu, the principle of Migu is that if you could have said something, and that gives you a position of leverage. So therefore, anything you say below that is therefore, by definition, going to be credible. He could say, Lakuchu biyadi. Well, I bought it. In other words, nobody saw him seize it. So he could have argued that he bought it. Yochanan Melamemar Mechaim Tafsin Alei. So therefore, when he says that he seized it while the person was alive, he's believed on that as well. V'amar Reish Lakish Hagojosein Lem Chazaka. So the Gemara says, yeah, but generally speaking, when it comes to animals, animals don't have a chazaka. Animals are always constantly moving around. Generally speaking, animals don't have a set place. Shani Tura de Mesir LaRoa. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we're talking about a large animal, and a large animal pretty much does not move around. The Rashi describes the question was going on small animals, and the answer basically was large animals are different. They simply don't move around. So that ends story number two. Story number three. Debe nisi atafos amta dias meme simta. So the house of the Nasi was owed money. Okay, so in other words, a political figure, an important political figure. So they were owed money, so they took. And in this case, what they took was a maidservant, and they took it from the orphans, and they took it from the simta. So in other words, the maidservant wasn't currently in the house. The maidservant was out in the street, off to the side of the street, and they did a tefisa. Yosef Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi, Rabbi Yitzhak Nafcha, Yosef Rabbi Abba, Gabayhu. So we have a whole group of Amorim together. Amaluhu, Shapir Tafsu. So he says to him, good, yeah, that was a great job of seizure. So Amaluhu, Rabbi Abba. So Rabbi Abba now commenting on this, and he says, "Mishum de benesios nenu machnafisu." So he says, "You know, I'm going to accuse you of chanifa, flattery." Okay, you know, look, I see that this is the from the person who did the seizure was from the house of the Nasi. And so therefore, you're like, look, we're all this way in front of people of political power. So, you know, we're nice to them. We, you know, we say nice things even though we don't really mean it. And that's you. May I please remind you that there was once a case where there was a seizure that was done against the orphans, and Reish Lakish says, you go back and you go return the items, because after the person died, there's simply no room for seizure. And it's true that Rabbi Tarfon allowed it, but according to Reish Lakish, we don't pass like Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon is, according to Reish Lakish, a totally excluded position. And so Rabbi Reish Lakish may go and give it back. So over here, if Reish Lakish were here, he would tell the house of the Bein Nasi, you go back and you return that Amasa, you return that maidservant back to them. Okay. Next. Yemer Barchashu Hava Masik Beizuze Ba'u Gavra. Yemer Barchashu had a claim of money against a particular person. So Shachiv, the person died. Vishavik Arba. And he leaves as one of his possessions left on this earth, a boat. And so now, what Yemer Barchashu does is he hires a collection agency. Now, I got to be careful about how I describe this, though, because I said he hired a collection agency. So I may not be right about that. So right now, I'll just stick with the words of the Gemara, and that is, he sent a shliach. Okay? I'll leave it right now with those choice words. So So he says to the shliach, go and grab that boat for me. Seize that boat for me. So the shliach does exactly as he's asked. So now on his way back with the boat, I'm not really sure how to visualize this, but he meets with Rav Papa and Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua. So Amrule, so they say to the shliach, what you did is not correct. At tofes labachov, b'makom shechav la'acherim. Here's the problem. Good. You were tofes for the balchov. You grabbed on behalf of the creditor. Right. But there are other creditors. And as we're going to learn in just a moment, two of those other creditors were these same very Amorayim. So, okay, fine. Okay, disclosing some information that needs to be disclosed. So those are two of the other creditors. But in the meantime, however, the halacha is very clear. And that is, you can't take on behalf of somebody else when that is going to, by definition, be a cause of a loss for others. Now, if the creditor himself comes and he's the one who takes it, so he has as much of a right to it as the other creditors. I understand there may be a note and there may be dates involved, and obviously the one with the oldest date is the one who gets first, but okay. But in other words, and that's important. But just put that aside for a moment. In other words, every creditor obviously has a right to take it. But for a third party to come in and to take on behalf of somebody when other people are going to lose, that's the principle of chav balchov. I'm sorry, tofes balchov b'makom shechav la'acherim. You can't do that. And so v'am Rav Yochanan, and Rav Yochanan says very clearly, unequivocally, tofes balchov b'makom shechav la'acherim lo kana. So you did not make a king, and you did not acquire that boat.
But he's not really a shliach.
Now, it only begs the next question. Danny, you read my mind. And that is that the Gemara described him as being a shliach. So that means as follows. We have now this idea of a person's owed money, and he sends someone to collect. What we would call in this country a collection agency. And by the way, collection agency is just that. In other words, it's an agent. It's a shliach. So that means I'm appointing him as my agent. So you mean to tell me that I can't, the only way that I can collect the debt is only if I personally collect it, and even if I appoint an agent to collect it on my behalf, and there are other creditors, and by him doing so, they're going to lose out. I can't appoint a shliach to do it. So Tosfos says that's correct. Everything I just said is correct. So Atofos Bachov Makush Shechav La'Achirim. See Tosfos. It's toward the bottom of the Amud. He writes. It's 1, 2, 3, 4 Tosfos from the bottom. So Kan Mashma Da'afagav Dasu Shliach. Even in this case, they appointed him a shliach. The Amalei Zil Tafsei. Because look at the wording of the Gemara. Sounds like from the Gemara he made him a shliach. Afilo hachi lo kana. V'lo kemoshe pirush bekushos berakamad abam metziah dafka b'shelo asu shliach lo kana. Now, for full disclosure, Tosfos points out, there is a Rashi in Bab Metziah, and Rashi says that if you make him a shliach, so then he can take on your behalf. But Tosfos says no. Tosfos says that even if you make him a shliach, you can't he can't collect on your behalf. And that, of course, begs the question, which is, why not? Meaning, if you make him a shliach, shlucho shel adam kamoso, so then he becomes you. He's an extension of you. So why can't he collect on your behalf? So good. So that requires analysis, discussion. Meaning that in of itself makes for a good topic.
Yeah, can the shliach take a shuva on behalf of the balchov?
That's a good question. Also, that I don't know. That's a very good question. Okay, so anyway, so we're now on the top of Pehemad Aleph. So now let's reacquaint ourselves with the story. Let's get back. So Yemer Bar Chashua was owed money by this guy. The guy died. So he sent a shliach to go collect the boat. The shliach went to collect the boat. Two Amoraim stopped him on the way and said, "You can't do that. You're not Yemer Bar Chashu. So you can't just simply grab that boat when other creditors are going to lose out." And Rav Yochanan says, so good. So now we're on the top of Pehei Amud Aleph, and we're continuing in the story. So, Tafsua Inhu. So these two Amoraim, who just told the shliach, "Hey, you can't do that." So what do? They grab the boat. Now, mind you, by the way, just in case you were worried about collusion, don't worry about collusion, because each one of them had their own outstanding loan. So each one of them was trying to get the boat for themselves. Rav Papa Mimlach Malucha. So Rav Papa rode the boat, and Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua Memasech Lebashla, and Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua pulled on the rope to get the boat closer to him. Maranana Kanina La Lakula. So this one claims that I should be entitled to the boat. Maranana Kanina Lakula. And the other one claims that I should be the rightful owner of the boat. Okay, look, I know it's a funny scene. I know we're painting a funny picture. But look, when all said and done, all three of them are owed money. And it's just a question now of who is the rightful owner of that money. So Pagabu Rav Pinchas Bar Ami. So Rav Pinchas Bar Ami runs into these Rebbeim. Amalu Rav Shmuel Dar Mitavaya Vehu Shitzli Bor Menachem Rishos Harabim. So he says to them, look, even if you're relying on the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon, because let's remember that all this was a function, all this boat grab, if you will, was a function of the fact that the owner of the boat died. And so, remember, they're all seizing. So the only way it would work is if they're relying on the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon, which we already know Reish Lakish doesn't want to hear about it whatsoever. But obviously these Amoraim are hearing about it. So they're not in agreement with Reish Lakish. Fine. But the Gemara says, but even if you're relying on the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon only stated his viewpoint if the assets are under Rishos Harabim. Now, even that's open for debate as well. But according to Rav and Shmuel, only if the assets are under Rishos Harabim. Amalu ananami me charefusa denahara tafsina. Their argument is, the boat wasn't at a dock, the boat wasn't by the bank of a river, the boat was in the middle of the lake, and that's like a Rishos Harabim. Also, come to Rav, amalu kake chivre. So they go to Rav, and Rav finally gives them a ruling, and he refers to them as white geese, and obviously he's not saying that by way of praise. He's obviously unhappy with their behavior. You are stripping clothing off of people, meaning that then what you're doing is not right. You're seizing property. Remember, we go back to the ruling of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, seizure works, but only when you seize when the principal borrower is alive. He's dead. We don't rely on the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. And Rav Nachman says, and you had no right to take it.
What if he was alive? He told me that with the
That's a reasonable question. I don't know the answer.
What kind of kinyan is drawing the boat?
It's a by land we say this not so much by metaltum, but there's what's called a chazaka, not in terms of squatter's rights, but chazaka meaning a proprietary act. You do something which is a clear demonstration that you're the owner of the land. So that works by land. It doesn't work by movables, and I guess I don't know.
But
I'm just.
You have to put it on yourself, right?
Huh? Yeah, correct. You have
the machine. That was pulling was.
Okay. Again, I don't know the answer. It's a reasonable question. Next story. Avime braid Rabbi Abo have a maske bezuze bechuzai. Avime, son of Rabbi Abo, had a claim against him from people in Chuzai. Okay, just recently we saw Chuzai was some far out town, right? And remember there was that fortune that was inherited in Beit Chuzai, and remember the husband spent 600 zuz in travel expense to go get the 400 fortune. Okay, anyway, so Shadrina biyad chama brei derava bar abahu. Okay, so story goes like this. So again, so Avime was the one who had a claim against him, meaning he was the one who owed money, and the creditor was out in Beit Huzai. So, and now he's sending the an amora by the name of Chama Brei Derava Baravua to go and to satisfy the loan. Okay, so I'm going to pay. He sends the money with the shliach, and the shliach now goes and pays. Azo parane. So the first thing the shliach does is he puts the money down in front of the creditors. Great. Amar lehu havli shtare. Now the shliach says to the creditors, "Okay, now do me a favor. Give me the note." Right? Back in the good old days, and you know, not much has changed today. I understand everything now is technology, but in other words, now that you satisfy the note, give me the note so I could tear up the note. So give me the note. Amar leh sitrai ninhu. So they come back with a response. Oh, you know, the money that you gave us, that is for another loan. Meaning that there were two outstanding loans. One loan was on paper, right, the one we're holding right now, and the second loan was a verbal loan. And what you did is you just paid up the verbal loan. So asal kamei de Rabbi Abahu. So they go to Rabbi Abahu. Now it is interesting, by the way, because the person who the case is about was Avimi, the son of Rabbi Abahu. And generally speaking, you cannot have a parent serving as a judge, or for that matter, a witness. But anyway, so I'm not glossing it over, but I'm just making an observation. Also, kamei de Rabbi Abahu amale islach sahadit de parasinu. So, do you have any witnesses that said that saw you pay the loan? He's asking the shliach. Anyone actually see you give him the money? Amar leh lo, he says, no, nobody saw me give him the money. So Amar leh, migi dechol lomar lo hayidvar me'olam, look, you really are now in a very compromised position. Meaning, although you gave him the money, nobody saw you give the creditor the money. And now it comes out that really they're in a position that they can deny everything altogether. And now yecholim nami lamemer sitrai ninhu. So now they could deny having gotten paid altogether, and now they want to make another claim, which is that there was another loan, and there was an oral loan. So at this point in time, you got to take the loss.
It's like a migur.
Yeah, it is like a migur. So fine. So this shliach really botched up the job. Meaning, what his job was to take the money that was given to him, pay back the loan, and get back the note. He paid the money without witnesses, and he doesn't have a note now in his hand. So he really did a bad job. And prompts the Gemara to ask the next question, Le'in Yishlomi Shliach, Mai. So now, what kind of liability is the Shliach himself looking at? Am Ravashi Chazin, and so Ravashi says, well, let's think about this. If the instructions of the Mishaleach, the borrower, was first take the note back and then pay the money, and he didn't do that, so then that's malpractice on the part of the Shliach. He did not follow instruction to a T, and therefore he is going to have to suffer full liability. However, if instructions were pay the money and then take the note, so then lo mishalem. So then he did exactly as was instructed, and it just went haywire. But he follows instruction, and therefore he does not have to suffer liability. Velohi. But after the Gemara made such a distinction, the Gemara ends up saying, no, we're not going to make such a distinction. And the Gemara says at this point in time, no, because when you send a shliach, you're sending a shliach for constructive purposes, not destructive purposes. In other words, clearly over here, the transaction was going to be that the shliach was going to take the money that was given to him, satisfy the obligation, and get back the note. And even if you didn't give him the clearest instruction of first take the note and then pay back the loan, the understanding is that he's there for one purpose and one goal, and that is to satisfy the obligation. He didn't do that. He doesn't have the money. He didn't satisfy the obligation for whatever technical reason. So the shliach has that liability. Maybe. In other words, maybe this case is not right. Could be. Hahu isa dahava mifkede gaba maloga deshtara. Okay, next story. A woman had by her, deposited by her, a basket full of notes. Okay, so in other words, somebody trusts this woman and gave her all of his checks, all of his bonds for her to hold. Also, Yorshim katav lemina. So the Yorshim come and they say to her, okay, you know what? Thank you very much for doing such a good job. Our father passed away. And could you now give us back those notes? Amra lohu, she says to the Yesomim, mechayim tafisna lohu. She says, you know, I was really owed the money. And what I did is, as I seized them from your father while he was still alive. So she was wise enough to know that a tefisa after he died is not going to be helpful. So her claim now to the estate is to the orphans is that I took this money while your father was still alive. Also, they come to Rav Nachman. So they go in front of Rav Nachman. Amar la islach sahadi detavu aminach mechayim. So Rav Nachman says, you are claiming that you made a seizure. That's fine. Do you have any witnesses corroborating that you in fact took it? So velo yavid niale, and he didn't just simply give it to you. Amra le lo. So she says to Rav Nachman, no, I don't have witnesses to that effect. Im kein have tfisa lachamisa. So really now, here are the facts. The facts is that you're holding these notes. And the facts that, and you're not disputing the fact that they belong to him. And the only issue now left for contestation is whether or not they were seized while he was alive, or they were seized after he died. And you don't have evidence that you seized him while he was alive. So I'm now, the only thing I'm left to say is, have a tfisa lachamisa, utfisa lachamisa lo klumhi. So now you cannot produce witnesses that you seized him while he was alive. And the starting point is, we know they belong to him. So this is, hamotzi mechaveru al avaraya. We all agree they belong to him. And now it's just a question of when you seize them. And you have a claim, but you don't have proof to your claim. So they're going to go back to him. They're going to belong to him. And now you'll have to go about it in the regular process of going to the orphans, taking the orphans to court, making a shvua. But no, Rav Nachman did not award her with those notes at that point in time.
Isn't she holding the pouch? Yeah.
She's holding the pouch, but she's admitting that she's not the owner. She's admitting that the owner of these notes was the father, and her only claim now is that she sees them because of an obligation.
Why can't we say that since the deceased owed her, and he had notes from the relationship, she should go to other people like A O's, B and B or C.
Pruta de Rab Nachman.
Right.
I'm sorry, Pruta de Rabbi Abba. Okay.
I mean, does she really need those notes, or should she go directly to that to the other?
Okay. Good. I don't know. How is the Isis of the Chayveshvua Beidina de Rava? Okay. A woman came to court in front of Rava, and she had to make a shvua. Okay, so somebody claimed that she owed money, and she just denied it. Now, in general, we know that a full denial, minatar, does not require a shvua. We also know the Chachamim said, yeah, but you know what? He claimed that you owe money, and you're making a full denial. You know what? Come to court, make a shvua. Fine. That's the midrabanan yeshvua is even on a full kfira, on a full denial. So fine, so now they find themselves in court in front of Rava, and she now is ready to make a shvua that she doesn't owe the money. Amalei bas Rav Chista, the daughter of Chista says to Rava, parenthetical note, the daughter of Chista also happens to be Rava's wife. Okay, she always is referred to as the daughter of Rav Chista. She's not given a name, and it's Rav's wife. So Amalei bas Rav Chista yadana ba dechashuda shvua. So she whispers in her husband's ear, and she says, "Don't trust her." Now, this woman is about to make a shvua. She's lied before, and she has no reliability. She has no credibility, and so I'm telling you, she's not going to make a shvua. Now, here comes another halacha in the world of shvuas, and that's the following: if there's a shvua to be made in court, now, generally speaking, most of the time, when a shvuah is made, it's there to be made so that you don't have to pay another person money. Rare is the time that a shvuah is made in order to extract money. But here's going to be one of those rare instances. Because in this particular case, a shvuah needs to be made. First, the person, the woman who is denying owing the money is the one to make the shvuah. But because she has lost her credibility, now the Gemara is going to point out in just a moment, she lost the credibility based on the testimony of one person, and it's the daughter of Rav Chisda. So how did that work? Stay tuned. I'm going to come back to that in just a moment. But in the meantime, however, she lost her credibility. She can't make the shvua. So now what happens in halacha is that the shvua now goes to the other litigant. And the other litigant now has an opportunity to make a shvua in order to extract the money. A shvua is going to be made. It's just a question of who? First order of business is that the defendant should make the shvua. If for whatever reason they can't, so now the claimant makes the shvua, and he's not going to be able to collect his money. So afcha rabba l'shvua ashech enegda, exactly as we just described. Rava flips the shvua now to the other litigant, and so now that other litigant did make a shvua and did collect his money. So Gemara tells another story where Rava was now in front of Rav Papa and Rav Adar Bar Masna. I saw Ushtara Gabe, and along comes a person with a note. Amale Rav Papa Yadanabe Deshtara Priyahu, and Rav Papa turns to Rava and whispers in his ear, "You know that note? That note was already been paid up. That note's no good." In other words, generally speaking, a note is all the evidence you need. But Rav Papa now is testifying that I saw the borrower pay that loan already, and for whatever reason, the creditor is still holding the note, but the note's already been paid up. So Rava says to Rav Papa, "You got anyone else to corroborate your story?" So Amar Leilo. So Rav Papa says, "No, I'm the only one who knows this information." So Amalei Afagav Dikamar Eid Echad Lach Plumhu. So Rava says to Rav Papa, "Look, I hear you, but from a halachic standpoint, you're one person, an Eid Echad, and you cannot invalidate a shtar based on the testimony of one witness." So Amalei Rav Adar Bar Masna. So Veloye Rav Papa Kabas Rav Chista. So Rav Adar Bar Masna says to Rava, "You know, Rav Papa should be worse than your wife." Meaning, just the other day, your wife whispered in your ear, and she said to you, "You know, that woman can't make a shvua. She's no good." And you immediately listen to your wife, and meanwhile, Rav Papa is telling you that this shtar is no good, and you're not going to listen to Rav Papa. So, Bas Rav Chista, what an interesting answer coming up in the Gemara. Bas Rav Chista Kimli Begava. As far as the daughter of Rav Chista is concerned, this is Rava now talking. Kim Li Begava. I know that she is unbelievably credible. Not a dishonest thing comes out of her mouth. And therefore, if she says somebody is it lacks credibility in making a shvua, I will believe her. Mar lo kim li begave. However, you don't have that kind of authenticity as my wife does. And therefore, if you want to invalidate a shtar, you're going to need two witnesses. One interesting concept that we have over here, that certain people are given such a sterling reputation that whatever they say is going to be credible and going to be believable, and it was his wife, and to what extent does that go to? I understand this opens up a serious Pandora's box to right. Okay, that's a lot of voices.
Yeah. Another one was a witness himself. There are two different things.
Okay, I hear you.
He was not gonna have the double.
I'm saying it's Rav Papa. He's talking about Rav Papa. I mean, it's not just anybody. I understand. I'm Rav Papa. Hashadam Rakimli Begave Milsahu. So Rav Papa says, okay, good. So Rav Papa, right? I love these stories for so many reasons. But you see, Rav Papa just, he took it. Okay? I accept. He wasn't offended. Good. So in other words, how should Dharma Mar Kimli Begave Milsahu? So now that I'm introduced to this concept of Kimli Begave, that certain people have an air of trust about them that whatever they say is credible, Kagon Abba Mar Mari, the Kimli Begave, Karanishtar Rapume. So now, if Abba Bar Mari were to tell me anything, okay, in other words, another Amora who just out of nowhere, the Gemara says he has that air of credibility. Where if he says something, you know what I'll do? I'll tear Shtara based on his testimony. To which the Gemara says, Karana Sakadacha, tear a Shtara? Meaning it's one thing to discredit a person from making a Shvuah. But tear a shtar up just because one person says so? Ela maran shtarei apume. So the Gemara says, no, I'm not going to tear the shtar up because one person says to tear it up. But what I'll do is I will seriously challenge the validity of the shtar based on the testimony of that one person because of this concept of kimli begave. I know that he has that kind of air credibility. Tosus points out over here what this means practically is that if he brings the shtar into court, I'm not going to collect just based on the shtar. He's going to have to make a shvuah on top of that, meaning that I'm going to challenge the validity of that. Let's do one more story for today. So a woman was obligated to make a shvuah in the court of Rabbi Bar Abaye. Amalehu ahu baldin teisiv tishtava b'masa. And so the other litigant says, you know what? I want home court advantage. I know I try not to bring up sports in the context of the daf, but we all know home court advantage is a big deal. And he says, I want her not only to make a shvuah here, but I want her to make a shvuah in my hometown, right? With my, I know this is going to sound terrible, with my judges and my. In other words, I'm more comfortable. That's why I wanted to make a shvuah. Generally speaking, it's a lengthy discussion. I'll just bring it up. Generally speaking, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, I think third perek, I'm going on memory, has a discussion of who has rights and entitlements to have the case settled in their location. But anyway, so baldin teisiv tishava b'masa asher demechsefa omoya, because I know she's not going to tell the truth here, and so hopefully if I bring her back to my hometown, she'll be a little bit embarrassed and she'll tell the truth and she'll admit that she owes me the money. So amar lehu kasuli zechus zachvasa. So now she asked the court, look, we're going to go to his hometown, I'm going to make a shvuah, fine. Do me a favor, could you just write it up right now? Meaning write up that I made the shvuah, I don't owe the money, don't sign it now, but just write it up right now, and then when we go there and I make the shvuah, they'll just sign it and be good. So in other words, this touches on the issue of, can we pre-write documents? Even though they haven't occurred yet, but in anticipation of them occurring, could we write it up first and then sign it up and then sign it afterwards? I'm sorry. So that when I do make the shvuah, so immediately they're going to give it to me. So Rabbi Bar Abaye says, yeah, okay, yeah, you know what? She's right. Write it up for her. So he says, you come from sure people, therefore you say sure things. As Rashi explains, Rabbi Bar Abaye was the son of Abaye. Abaye, we know, comes from the family of Eli. Eli was cursed that him and all of his children are going to live short lives. Abaye, we know, lived a short life. His son now is going to live a short life. In other words, it's in the DNA that they're going to live short lives. And I understand it's not a nice thing to say, but it's very sharp. But look, listen to what you're saying. You're going to write something up before it actually happens. Hamarava, hi. The Kiyum Shtar that we spoke about in the second parak of Ksuvos, where you cannot write the Kiyum Shtar before people actually authenticate the signature of the witnesses. So over here, Ama Mechzik Hashikra. And the reason why you can't write it up first is because it looks like a lie. It didn't happen yet. So Achanami Mechzik Hashikra. So over here, same thing. V'leisa Medrav Nachman, Dam Rav Nachman, Omer Hayar Amer, Afilam Asa Ba'ashba, V'chisma V'nasna L'Kasher, V'afil filler Rabban lo pligal adra meir ala begitei nashim. Debi in aksiv l'shema. The Gemara says, yeah, but you know, if you find a get in a garbage and you pick it up and lo and behold, it's got my name, it's got my wife's name. Ah, fortuitous. So the person wants to give it as a get. So according to Rab Meir, you can do it. And the Chachamim disagree. But the Chachamim only disagree because of this principle of tziv l'shema. The get has to be written specifically for this person and that woman. Ava b'shar shtar is mo delay, but you could pre-write documents. Da'amar avasi amar av yochan shtar shal ava bo paro ayin chozev al ava bo. Shekvar nimcha shibudo. Let's say you want to reuse a note. Can you reuse a note? The answer is no. But the reason why you can't reuse a note is because once the note's been paid, that's it. The shibud is gone. Its strength has been removed. But that's the only issue. Meaning, aval lemechze kishikra lo chayshinan. But the idea that, well, you're pre-writing it, it doesn't look right. Right, two different rights. Right, you're pre-writing it doesn't look right. The Gemara says that's not a consideration, that's not a concern. So the Gemara ultimately says that under most circumstances you are allowed to pre-write a document. In the case of authentication, you're not allowed to pre-write it. That requires an explanation why in that case you can't pre-write it. But generally speaking, you want to prepare documents even though it happened before the event actually happened. Generally speaking, the Gemara says that's fine.